I want the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and John Russell. Later, Steve Emper will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a new study says a mysterious cookie-shaped object that entered our solar system likely broke off from a distant planet. Arizona State University astronomers reported earlier this month that the strange 45-meter object appears to be made of frozen nitrogen. The study's writers, Alan Jackson and Stephen Desch, think a powerful force knocked a piece off an icy, nitrogen-covered planet 500 million years ago. The piece was pushed out of its own star system toward ours. The reddish object is believed to be much different than its original self, with outer parts greatly affected by radiation and the sun. The object is called Oumuamua, a Hawaiian word that means messenger from afar. It is named for the observatory in Hawaii that discovered it in 2017. Oumuamua was first seen as only a small bit of light millions of kilometers away. It was found to have come from beyond our solar system because its speed and path suggested it was not orbiting the sun or anything else. The only other object confirmed to have come from another star system into our own is the comet 2I Borisov, discovered in 2019. Oumuamua looked like an asteroid, but sped along like a comet. Unlike a comet, however, it did not have a visible tail. Scientists could not agree on whether it was an asteroid or a comet. Some even suggested it may have been linked to alien life. Everybody is interested in aliens, and it was inevitable that this first object outside the solar system would make people think of aliens, Desch said in a statement. But it's important in science not to jump to conclusions. Jackson and Desch created computer models that helped them find that Oumuamua was most likely a piece of nitrogen ice. They also found that the object was being slowly worn down over time. Their two papers were published by the American Geophysical Union. They were also presented at the Lunar and Planetary Sciences Conference, which was held online earlier this year. When Oumuamua was closest to Earth, it appeared to have a width 6 times larger than its thickness. That is about the same as 1/2 of an Oreo cookie, Desch noted. Oumuamua is now more than 3.2 billion kilometers away and too small to be seen, even by the Hubble Space Telescope. As a result, Jackson said, astronomers will need to depend on the original observations to continue studying it. Desch noted that the object will continue to become thinner as it moves through space. He said in an email that by the time Oumuamua starts leaving our solar system around 2040, it will be as flat as a pancake.
Have you ever thrown a camel? Camels are large and heavy animals, so it would be hard to do. But in the French-speaking Democratic Republic of the Congo, to throw a camel is a way of saying to make a spelling mistake. Here's how the phrase sounds in French.
Lancer un chameau.
In the past, a phrase like that was not accepted by the French government as an official French term. But recently, the French Ministry of Culture worked on a new kind of dictionary that accepts the idea that many people outside of France speak the language. The language has changed over time and is different in places like Ivory Coast in West Africa or Quebec in Canada compared to how it is in Paris. A new online dictionary called the French Speakers Dictionary includes new French words from around the world. It was released on March 18th. Just in time for International French Speakers Day on March 20th. Supporters say the new internet dictionary is more democratic than earlier French dictionaries that only showed the way highly educated French people spoke. The new dictionary includes unofficial words like pourriel, which means an unwanted email if you are in Canada. It is a word based on courriel, which just means an email. French President Emmanuel Macron proposed the idea of the dictionary in 2018. It now contains about 600,000 terms. Roselyne Bachelot is the French culture minister. She said the dictionary is not just for France's 67 million citizens, but for the 300 million French speakers worldwide. People can see the dictionary on a website or with an app. Users can also send in new words they think should be included. I'm Dan Friedel.
Public schools in many parts of America have been closed to in-person classes during the COVID-19 crisis. Now, there is evidence that the closures are having an effect on the mental health of students. The Reuters news agency questioned school officials around the country last month to examine the mental health effects of full or partial school shutdowns. The schools were in large and small districts. They serve more than 2.2 million students across the United States. Of the districts that answered the questions, 74% reported several signs of increased mental health issues among students. More than half of them reported increases in mental health referrals and counseling. Counseling is advice and support that is given to people to help them deal with problems. Mental health issues were not only a concern for students. 57% of districts reported an increase in teachers and support employees seeking assistance. School closures have affected districts in every state. In the spring of 2020, all U.S. public schools from kindergarten to 12th grade closed, at least temporarily. The goal was to help slow the spread of the new coronavirus. Burbio is an internet service that follows school openings. Its website said that, in February, 57% of students attended public schools that were completely or partially closed. Some school leaders, teachers' labor groups, and parents still support full or partial school closures. They say the closures protect the health of children or prevent community spread. Yet research over the last year has shown that public schools following social distancing guidelines usually experience low rates of coronavirus spread. Recently, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported on conditions in schools. The CDC noted that the majority of cases that are acquired in the community and are brought into a school setting result in limited spread inside schools if preventive measures are in place. Deadly COVID-19 cases among children make up less than 0.1% of all deaths, the CDC said. Of the 36,860 overall child deaths in the past year, 216 involved COVID-19. At the beginning of the coronavirus crisis, school closings received little resistance. Many parents believed the shutdowns would last a few weeks, but closures continued for months and began to affect many students. Without regular supervision from schools or parents, some students are on their own. Jamie Banks of the Philadelphia Public School District has received a police report almost every week about students since classes went online last year. They include involvement in shootings, car accidents, and arrests. Deadly youth shootings in the city rose from 55 in 2019 to 87 in 2020, and non-deadly shootings increased 72% over a four-year average of earlier years. That information comes from the Philadelphia Office of the Comptroller. Some educators believe fewer incidents would happen were the students in schools. One year after school shutdowns began, some parents are becoming increasingly concerned about online classes. Siva Raj is a single father of two boys in San Francisco, California. He is co-leading a campaign to get new leadership for the school district. His older 14-year-old son has lost all desire to learn, he said. He often just goes between his bed and computer. Raj said about his son, "I feel like I am failing him." In cases where children return to the classroom, some parents say they see a change. As her children struggled with remote learning, Kate Sullivan Morgan and her husband looked at their finances. They saw there was no way they could pay for private schools, which offered in-person teaching, for their two children. In the fall, they decided to sell their house in San Francisco and move to Austin, Texas, where their sons could go to public school. Since January, both sons have been back in school 5 days a week. They are back to their old selves, the mother said. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of America's 37th president.
I, Richard Billhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear
that you will faithfully execute the office.
That I will faithfully execute the office
of President of the United States.
Of President of the United States.
Richard Nixon was sworn into office on January 20th, 1969. Nixon began his presidency at a difficult time. American forces, allied with the Army of South Vietnam, were continuing to fight against the communist forces of North Vietnam. Thousands of soldiers and civilians were dying. The Americans and South Vietnamese were making little progress, and there were anti-war demonstrations in the United States. There were also demonstrations against racial injustice. The issues that divided the nation also divided families and friends. At the same time, fighting the war meant there was less government money available to fight social problems. The last president, Lyndon Johnson, had proposed new legislation to help poor people and minorities. In some cases, Congress approved less money than he had requested. In other cases, lawmakers did not approve any money at all. The new president seemed well prepared to deal with the difficulties of being president. He was known for his ability to fight, to lose, and to keep trying. Richard Nixon was born in California. His family was poor. When he was about 10 years old, he harvested vegetables to help earn money for his family. He earned the money that he needed to go to college. Then he decided to study law. He was among the top students in his class. During World War II, Nixon served in the Navy in the Pacific. When he came home, he ran for a seat in Congress and won. As a member of the House of Representatives, Nixon became known for his part in the Alger Hiss case.
I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States.
Alger Hiss was a former official in the State Department. He had been accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusations. Nixon demanded a congressional investigation. Other members of the House thought the issue should be dropped, but Nixon succeeded and led the investigation. While never convicted of espionage, Hiss was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury that investigated the case. He was sentenced to prison. Some Americans disliked Richard Nixon for the way he treated people during the investigation. They felt that some of his attacks were unfair. At that time, fear of communism was very strong. Critics thought he was using the situation for his own gain to improve his political future. In 1950, Richard Nixon ran for the Senate. Nixon, a Republican, competed against Democrat Helen Gehagan Douglas, a former actress and three-time California congresswoman. During the often bitter campaign, he accused her of not recognizing the threat of communism in America. He also said that Douglas was pink right down to her underwear, a reference to her being sympathetic to communism. In response, Congresswoman Douglas gave Nixon a nickname he would never completely lose, Tricky Dick. Nixon won the election. Two years later, in 1952, the Republican Party chose him as its candidate for vice president. The candidate for president was Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower and Nixon easily defeated the Democratic Party candidates, Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson and Alabama Senator John Sparkman. They won again in 1956. During his 8 years as vice president, Nixon visited 60 countries. He faced violent protests during a visit to South America in 1958. The following year, he visited the Soviet Union. He and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev had what became known as the Kitchen Debate. It took place in Moscow as they visited a model of a kitchen that might be found in an American house.
Давайте так. Телевидение, конечно, можно, но телевидение можно выступать, никого здесь нет, а потом это положите на склад.
The debate was about world peace. Nixon at one point told Khrushchev that he did not know everything, but there were light moments as well.
Не уступай.
Minor's hotel. Our minor can match American lawyer.
Адвокату.
No question about that.
Вы адвокат капитализма, я адвокат коммунизма. Вот давайте мы посоревнуемся.
All that I can say from the way you talk and the way you dominate the conversation, you would have made a good lawyer yourself.
In 1960, Nixon accepted the Republican nomination for president. He had many years of political experience and had gained recognition as vice president. Many people thought he would win the national election easily, but he lost to the young John Kennedy. It was the closest presidential election since 1984. After losing to Kennedy, Nixon moved back to California. Then, in 1962, he tried to defeat Governor Edmund Pat Brown, a Democrat, and lost. In conceding defeat, Nixon gave a final press conference in which he told reporters,
"For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore."
Nixon's political career seemed to be over. He moved to New York City and worked as a lawyer. But he made it clear that he was not ruling out a return to public life at some point in the future. Many Republicans began to see Richard Nixon as the statesman they wanted in the White House. By then, President Johnson had decided not to run for re-election in 1968. His Democratic Party was divided. The Republicans believed they had a good chance to win the election.
Nixon campaigned hard against the Democratic candidate, Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was vice president under Johnson and had to defend the president's unpopular policies on the Vietnam War. Some Americans thought that the war should be expanded. Many others demanded an immediate withdrawal. Both Humphrey and Nixon promised to work for peace in Vietnam. On Election Day, voters chose Nixon. He narrowly won the popular vote, but collected many more electoral votes than Humphrey. On the day after his victory, Richard Nixon spoke to a gathering of supporters. He told them that the great objective of his administration from the start would be to bring the American people together. Once in office, President Nixon proposed legislation to deal with problems at home. He called his proposals the New Federalism. One proposal was for revenue sharing. Under his plan, the federal government would share tax money with state and local governments. For 3 years, Congress objected. Then, in 1972, the revenue sharing plan was finally approved. Lawmakers also approved legislation for some of Nixon's other ideas. One changed the way American men were drafted into military service for the war. The new law said young men would now have their names chosen in a lottery system. Many people had criticized the earlier system, which they said chose too many poor people and racial minorities. These were the men who were fighting and dying in Vietnam. Congress also approved a change to the Constitution to decrease the voting age from 21 to 18. Supporters of the amendment said if people were old enough to fight and die in war, then they were old enough to vote. The amendment became law when 3/4 of the states approved it in 1971. On another issue, Nixon proposed to build a system to defend against missile attacks. He said it was needed to protect American missile bases. Congress approved the idea in 1969. Critics said it would only intensify the arms race with the Soviet Union. Nixon's first appointments to the nation's highest court also caused much debate. He named two conservative judges from the South, Clement Haynsworth and G. Harold Carswell. Lawmakers said Haynsworth had been unfair to blacks in his decisions and that Carswell was not prepared for the job. Congress rejected both nominations to the Supreme Court. President Nixon faced these disappointments and others, but he still had moments to celebrate during his first term. One came on July 20th, 1969. On that day, he and millions of people around the world watched as two American astronauts became the first humans to land on the moon.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.